Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Monday, April 29th, 2013. I'm Sam Mentor. Yvonne Bo is here again. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello.
See, the contest is how fast can I say that little intro part? I
could
probably
is.
Do it faster, but I just noticed that the last few shows, I've been saying that part without taking a breath. It's like blah, 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 and then let's go.
Well, I mean, that could be, you know.
I could also try like shaking it up. I could try shaking it up and doing different things.
Would you like some kind of award for that at some point?
I like awards.
You know, the other day my wife asked, I was reading at the during breakfast, okay, and she asked me, what am I reading about? And I can't remember exactly what it was about, but I think she says, well, can you read it out loud? And I'm trying to explain to my wife, honey, if I actually read it out loud, I have to really slow down. I don't think that I can read out loud as fast as I read, you know, without thinking.
Of course.
Well, I mean, okay. There's a lot of people that don't read that fast. Okay. All right.
Okay.
So that's not really an issue. But the thing is that I decided to try to see to read out loud as fast as I was reading silently. It's just ridiculously fast. And I had to slow down a little bit. But the point that I asked my wife, I said, did you really understand anything I just said? She's like, oh, shit, no.
Well, see, the thing is also, though, usually when you're reading in your head, as opposed to reading out loud, you're not actually reading word by word by word.
Right.
You're taking in whole phrases at a time.
Correct.
And sometimes, you know, and this sort of goes into the area of at some point you move from reading to skimming. But like if you're really reading fast, sometimes you scan whole pages at a time, just getting key words and concepts out of it without like actually even reading sentences.
No, I know that. But you do understand, though, that, okay, you and I are two people that have scored very, very high on verbal exams. The average American, both of us scored in the top one percentile. Okay, that's not the average.
No, that is not. That is not. That is true.
Okay, so, I mean, it's kind of ridiculous that we both scored in the top 1%.
And I'm actually a relatively slow, like you said, I'm above average, no doubt. But I'm like, when I'm reading, when I'm just sitting there reading a novel, I'm not a speed reader. You know, I read at a decent pace, but I'm not a speed reader. My wife can blow me away in terms of how fast she flips through the pages. But it also depends, of course, on what the hell you're reading.
Well, right.
Because
that makes a big difference.
Like a big fluffy novel, I'll speed through a lot faster than like something where every sentence is packed full of concepts that you have to get.
Right. And you're going back and you're trying to make sure you captured it, et cetera, and so forth and so on.
Yeah, they're different kinds of reading. But like,
if I'm reading a fucking thrilling novel, I mean, dude, I'm fucking like, I'm touring through that thing like a fucking missile.
Yeah, yeah.
So anyway.
You know, the worst, though, like the ones that get me, though, and because I have this thing, I've had this thing for years where I have disciplined myself that once I start a book, I finish a book. So like I could be like 30 pages in and decide I hate this piece of crap, but I'm going to force myself to finish the damn thing anyway. Okay.
Right.
Now, the worst are like nonfiction books that are really dry and not about something you really care about deeply. And what I find myself on those is like actual reading speed, like how fast I can turn a page, doesn't matter in that case. Because the reality is I'll read 2 to 3 pages a day and then I'll put the thing down and be like, I don't want to look at it again. And then it takes forever to finish the damn book.
Well,
and I suppose this is honestly, if my goal is getting lots of reading done, this is a really bad way to do it, because every time I get a book I don't like, I end up taking 3 months to finish that book and I don't start something else that I might like better.
Well, I don't know. Recently,
meanwhile, a book I like, I'll finish in a day or two.
I know. Recently,
and that's with stuff going on. If I'm not, like, you know.
Well, I totally agree. I mean, the last book that I really, like, grabbed that I totally tore, I have, like, four. I started about four or five different books that I'm at some point that I have not finished in the last year. Okay.
Well, I remember, and you may remember this as well, Yvonne. When I was in college, I had an entirely different reading scheme.
Which, wait a minute. Wait, but you put this stuff on a pile, wasn't it?
No.
And there was a sequence to it?
Well, not quite. What it was is I kept track of this on my scientific calculator.
Right, you kept track of it somehow.
And what I did is I kept track for each book what my rate was, how many pages per day I'd averaged since I started the book.
Yeah.
And I'd have 20, 30 books going simultaneously.
That's right. Okay. And when it came
time to pick up the book, I'd have the calculator figure out which one I'd had the slowest rate on so far. And that's the one I had to pick up next until I picked up the pace on that book and got behind the others. And so the problem with this, of course, is I had 20 or 30 books going and I'd be shifting back and forth between them.
You wouldn't fucking remember what the hell did they a book about.
Well, no, I would actually remember. I was actually pretty good at this because sometimes this scheme, like, would lend myself to, you know, I would read a chapter in one book and that would put me so far ahead of the other books that I wouldn't get back to that book for 6 months. But I was pretty good at picking up where I left off. Now, the problem was I just had way too many going at the same time. I never finished anything. It was way too scattered. And, like, so my next scheme was this. I do one book at a time, and I alternate fiction and nonfiction, and I always finish the book. And I've been doing that for, I don't know, for 10 years now, maybe longer. And it kind of works, but every once in a while I think, you know, I should just once again go back to the fuck it, you know, I'll just read whatever thing, but you know, then I'd read a whole bunch of crap fiction books and never get like the good educational nonfiction books. So it's sort of, I force myself to alternate.
Okay.
And like every fourth book is a book that theoretically at least is somewhat relevant to what I do for work.
I have no rhyme or reason or anything regarding or a method or any of the sort. I just grab a book because it just grabs my attention at that point. That's it, pretty much.
Well, there you go. Yeah. And I also, by the way, continue to be, I'm now, my strong preference is reading on my Kindle. And by reading on my Kindle, I actually mean reading on Kindle, which means it could be the device, it could be my iPad, it could be my phone, it could be my computer,
right. Whichever. The app.
I switch back and forth constantly, right. Like depending on which happens to be at hand at the moment. And so when I do have a physical book to read, I kind of like resent it. I'm like, oh, God damn it, I have to read a physical book now. So like right now I'm reading a book I got as like a Christmas present. It's actually the Steve Jobs biography I'm reading right now.
Well, that's kind of funny.
I have the physical hardcover of it.
That happens to be the last book that I actually finished.
Well, there you go. That's what I'm reading right now. I just got to the part where he left Apple and went to Next. But it's a big ass physical hardcover book that's a pain in the ass to carry around anywhere. So I'm not going through it anywhere near as fast as if I'd had it electronically, because it's a fairly compelling book. If I had it electronically, I'd be reading bits and pieces all whenever I had a spare moment. But I'm picking it up. I'm reading like, you know, 5-10 pages a day every once in a while, and I leave the book at home. I don't take it with me when I go out. So
I read quite a lot of it on my iPhone.
There you go.
Because I kept switching from my iPad to my iPhone, so it just, you know. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah, don't tell me how it turns out. No spoilers here.
Oh, yeah. You don't know he dies at the end?
Oh, my God, Yvonne. You spoiled
the
book
for me. I know, it's terrible. I know.
You bastard.
Jeez.
Next thing you're going to do is tell me how Titanic ends.
Oh, well, yeah. That'll really spoil that one for you.
Anyway, we have some actual topics.
We do.
Well, you know,
I'm almost passing out of sleep as we're talking about this. Not because I'm bored. It's just because I woke up like quite early, and I've got an early call tomorrow. My God.
Oh, sorry, guy. We'll keep it relatively short. It's been like a relatively slow. I mean, after the chaos week we had last week, it's been a kind of slow week again. And I guess that's like not a bad thing. I mean, like North Korea's disappeared. No one's talked about North Korea in the last week and a half. Pretty much.
Other than I heard something this morning that something that they.
They arrested some guy.
Somebody, and they want to execute him or something. Yeah. They've already determined that they're already going to give him the death penalty. I love how quickly their process is. I mean, geez, we arrested somebody. You know, we'll arrest somebody. You know, we got this guy, right? You know, the Boston guy.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, we still haven't indicted him.
We did indict him, didn't we?
We finally did. I don't know. He has been in front of a judge.
Yep.
I don't know if he's been formally indicted.
I don't know.
I think it was. But yeah, you know, let's face it, you know, there's a process, whatever. Dude, the North Koreans don't have any of those issues. They're already fucking they grabbed the guy. They're already saying that, oh yeah, this guy's gonna get the death penalty. I'm like, really? That took what, a couple of days?
Yeah. So anyway, so we do have a couple follow-ups on the Boston stuff. Nothing huge, but a couple follow-ups that it seems like it made sense for us to talk about. And then we had some developments with the sequester this week. And then we'll see what we feel like. There's the ricin thing that sort of got overshadowed by the Boston, and then there were some more developments this week. And we had, of course, the White House Correspondents' Dinner, and the Bush Library opened, and blah, 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 blah. So let's get to it. On Boston, I know, Yvonne, you had a couple things. I just wanted to mention a couple corrections from last week, because we mentioned last week how, you know, facts were really fluid at first, and blah, 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 and, you know, it takes a while for everything, for people to figure out what was really going on. There were two things we talked about last week that turned out not to be true. So one was we talked about the older brother being separated from his wife. In fact, he was not. His parents were separated, which is probably
where we got
them. Right,
they apparently got back together. Right.
Did they? See, you've got more info than I did.
I read a couple of days ago that apparently they're back together.
Okay, well, and there are some developments according to about the wife we'll talk about in a minute. But not only were they not separated, but there was an account in the, I guess it was the New York Times this week about how, you know, we talked yesterday, the younger guy went back to college, he was partying, he was going to classes and stuff. The older guy went home to his wife and 3-year-old daughter and was doing things like going to the grocery store, and he took his 3-year-old daughter to the park, and apparently, like, while he was out, he was asking people, hey, did you hear about the bombing? Blah, blah, blah. You know, and just chatting about it with people. And, you know, basically leading a normal domestic life, I guess, up until the moment they decided to flee. So that's one correction. The other correction is that there was talk about how the younger brother was shot in the neck, and that it might have been a self-inflicted wound, that he might have been trying to commit suicide. That turns out not to be the case. First of all, when he was in that boat at the end, he was not armed at all. He did not have any weapon with him. He did not have any bombs with him. He had nothing. There was a shootout, but apparently it was just the police shooting. There was one cop injured. Apparently it was friendly fire. Because, you know, they were on edge. They heard a noise from the boat. Who knows what the details were, but, you know, the shots were fired, but it was all the police. He was not armed at all at that point. And apparently the injury he had was not even a gunshot wound. It was shrapnel. And I'm not sure exactly what was that for, possibly from one of the flashbangs that was thrown into the boat, but it might have happened earlier as well. I haven't heard that detail yet. I don't know if you have, Yvonne.
No, I did not.
So those were the two corrections that I wanted to get out, and I know there have been a couple more developments about the mom, and they were tracking her, and some phone calls she made. And
right.
You want to talk about any of that, Yvonne?
Well, I mean, the one thing is just that, you know, you know, they talked about the Russians had contacted the FBI because of some activity. And then they actually said specifically that there were some calls in which she talked about jihad, which I guess that wasn't revealed precisely before.
I saw in a lot of the notes about this, by the way, it said it specifically noted in the news reports I've read that it was vague discussion of jihad.
Right.
So it wasn't like, hey, I'm going to make some bombs.
It wasn't that specific.
You know, it is apparently very vague. It could probably be interpreted in a dozen different ways. So it's not clear But people are sort of implying that maybe the mom was also getting radicalized, and but it's all very fuzzy.
Right. And so I don't know. And
by the way, she's also wanted for shoplifting, which is one of the reasons she's not coming back to the country.
Yeah. And she was saying some bullshit story about the shoplifting, saying, and she was on a mistake, and whatever, whatnot. And the guys over at security at the store say, are you fucking kidding me? We got our debt to rights on the fucking video. She went and she took the tags off. She did it. She fucking stood it away. She tried to return some items and tried to walk away with the ones that she wanted to steal. Fucking bullshit. And she fucking, like, it was some accident. She fucking tried to steal the damn clothes. So,
hey, you know, who hasn't gone into a store and accidentally removed the tags and accidentally tried to return something else and accidentally walked out?
God, yeah. I've been surprised at the number of people that I found out that, like, have actually, like, shoplifted it, honestly. I mean, I've met some people that went and just, like, admitted to me, like, that they have.
I honestly, certainly not remove the tags and stuff. I have, in fact, on a couple of occasions, forgotten I had something on me and started to walk out.
And then
I'm like, oh, shit, and I go pay for it, okay?
I've done that. I've actually made it
out of the store and to my car and then realized I had something, and I've gone back in and said, oh shit.
Well,
and
I will tell you that the one stupid thing I did once, which I didn't realize this until we were way gone from the place. I remember that the only thing that I recall taking like that. Okay. Sears had their catalog, right? They used to be free. Okay, now this is when I was a kid.
And so you took a catalog not realizing that they were no longer free.
One day I went and I saw that they had on a shelf a couple of catalogs, and my father had asked me for one, and my friend said, oh, grab me one, two. I said, no problem. Grabbed them, just walked out of the store. We're in the car, we're driving away. All of a sudden, I'm looking at the fucking top of the catalog. I says, wait a minute, this stupid thing says $6. And I'm like, well, fuck, I mean, I wasn't even the guy driving. I said, well, I ain't fucking turning back now. And I said, it's fucking bullshit. I got to pay for a catalog. And I thought at that point, yeah, it's fucking true. But anyway,
Yeah, I'm going to report you. You're going to jail, bastard.
Yeah.
But I will say, before we get back to the main topic here, I have also, of course, done the reverse. And the time, I've done this more than once. I've done this in grocery stores. I've done this in other places. But the time I remember the most was I was on a road trip. And I decided I was hungry. So I went through a drive-thru. Fast food, Burger King, McDonald's, Wendy's, one of those things. Went through the drive-thru. I ordered my food. I gave him a $20 bill, and I drove away. I realized 30 miles down the road that I forgot to grab my food.
Or get my change.
I just handed him a 20 and left.
That's really beautiful. I mean, I wasn't that bad. I mean, I remember like one time that I was listening to a baseball game on the radio, and it was the playoffs, and it got really exciting, and Pittsburgh won. Just as I handed somebody at a toll booth a $20 bill, and I just fucking drove off and like didn't take the change, and it was like I think the toll was a quarter.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, all right. And I just drove off and just fucking paid $20 for the damn toll. Yeah, I've done that. I did that.
Excellent. Oh, geez. Anyway, back to the topic. So she's not coming back to the country and she was also on a terrorist watch list. But apparently, here's one of the things that's being discussed. I mean, she was on a watch list that had 700,000 people on it.
Right.
So, like, what the fuck good is a watch list with 700,000 people on it? Like, really? Like, if you want to...
It's a watch list. It's not an arrest list.
No, I know. But it's like, you know, if you have such a wide net, it keeps you from concentrating on the folks that perhaps really should get more attention.
Well, honestly, 700,000 people is not that many if you think about it. It depends on what level of scrutiny you're doing. I mean, they're not going to be traveling all the time. You know, it's like, so I don't know. I mean,
it seems a little excessive, but you know, whatever. And the husband was going to go back to the U.S., but now is not due to health reasons. But I don't know. I haven't heard any details about what those health regions are exactly, but he's not coming back at the moment either. And did you hear any other developments worth mentioning? I mean, The guy stopped talking after he was given his Miranda warning. So some people are upset about that. I'm like, whatever, you know.
Yeah,
you got him.
Yeah, those people are hilarious. I mean, I'm just like all these fucking people. I'm like, everybody's talking, make him an enemy combatant. I'm like, you fucking morons. Like, the one thing there was an article yesterday about the older brother talking about, you know, what may have precipitated this whole thing. Really, to be honest with you, which
the boxing
was like
the thing.
Yeah, how his whole boxing career self-destructed basically because of a rule change that that was done by I can't remember the organization that runs the Golden Gloves boxing competition, but basically that, you know, Golden Gloves competition that basically decides who goes to the Olympics.
Right.
But the older brother wasn't a U.S. citizen, so he wasn't eligible to compete for the U.S. However, they used to allow non-U.S. citizens to compete in the rest of the years, but they couldn't go to the Olympics, okay? And then they made a rule change a couple of years ago. They said it was confusing, it was costing people, it was really confusing to be allowing people that were not eligible to go to the Olympics to compete in the lower levels. So they decided to bar them from competition, and I think the guy just did not take that very well, I guess. Because the guy was like a very flamboyant and very gung-ho boxer.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden,
it was pulled out from under him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, any other Boston updates? I mean, I think this is now in the phase where, you know, it'll move slowly over the course of a long time while the trial happens and whatever happens. And, you know, I don't know that there'll be any more really significant developments to talk about until they convict this guy.
Yep. I guess. So, we'll see.
Yeah, of course I say that, and of course something dramatic's going to show up tomorrow, but...
Maybe.
That's how things go.
Who knows?
Okay, let's take a break, and we'll come back and talk about the sequester.
This is a break, oh yes, this is a break. This is a break, cause no one gave me any suggestions. I told you, I warned you. So this is a break, this is a wonderful break, a wonderful break. Yes, indeed, this is a break. This is a break in the middle of Curmudge's Corner. Yes, this is a break. 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 Yes, it is a break. And now the break is over.
And we're back. So before we get into the sequester,
I'm back.
You know, I am looking at my desk right now, and I realize I have this one thing on my desk. Which I may have done this once before in my life. I'm not sure. But I've got a summons to jury duty.
Oh shit! Well, I've had that number of times.
You know, I certainly know that I've never been chosen for a jury, but I think I might have gotten summoned once before and had to sit in the room and wait to not be called. But I don't even clearly remember that. So maybe it's a false memory, but. Anyway, so May 20th and 21st. Very exciting.
Well, I haven't been to I got called the first few years that I moved here, multiple times to jury duty. I think I got called like four times. Actually, a couple of years ago, I got called for federal jury duty.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, for some reason they had my wrong address or something or whatever, and it was like, well, here's the thing, it was Broward County jury duty. I live in Palm Beach, but I actually live, I believe, closer to distance-wise to the Broward County Federal Courthouse and the Palm Beach County Federal Courthouse.
Mm-hmm.
So I was actually okay with having to participate, and I went. But I responded in the summons that it asked whether I had moved or something, whatever, and I explained, "Yeah, I don't live in Palm Beach County, but I can still serve." But they said, "Well, no, we got you at the wrong address. Sorry, no, you don't have to participate."
Yep.
And I'm
yep.
Like, so, but yeah, but that's the last time. It was like a couple of years ago. So, anyway, but yeah, I mean, for a while, I got called so often. I actually got called like multiple times to the point that there was a restriction on how many times you can get called. And I was like, I mean, I went the last one. I went. And I said, "Dude, I've been called like fucking like Jesus. How many times am I supposed to fucking show up to this damn courthouse?" But I mean, but amazingly enough, after I got called that many times, I haven't been called in a long time. So I'm not really sure why that has been.
Yeah. Okay. Well, anyway, so presuming we'll see what happens there, and I'll report back. Obviously, like, if I'm actually called for anything, I believe you're not allowed to, like, talk much about it. Well, it depends on the case, I guess. I don't know. Anyway, we'll see. Chances are what usually happens with these is you get called and you sit in a room and you wait and you're not called and then you're done.
So. Yeah, I know. And I never actually had to sit through a trial. The closest I got impaneled for a trial with a guy that was a car thief, mm-hmm. I remember. And the guy, just before the trial was going to start, basically pleaded out.
Right. You know, the other thing about these, of course, is I think, like, the whole process is, like, they have the whole process of jury selection, and the lawyers get to object to certain jurors, and, you know, if you've got any conflicts of interest, you're disqualified, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They've got a whole bunch of this process. You know, I think that's all extraneous. It should be like, you're chosen completely at random for the jury. That's it. You know, if you happen to be the defendant's brother, well, he got lucky. You know, but you pick them at random and you go. If you happen to be a guy that says, I don't care what happened, I'm always voting guilty, well, too bad. You know? You happen to, like, I don't know. Anyway. Trust in randomness. Like, I would have more trust in actual juries that were selected completely randomly with no discretion and no way to avoid it, no way to get it out, you know, except maybe, like, you're in the hospital and unable to move or something like that.
Well, I would hope so, yes.
You know, but, you know, I trust in randomness more than I trust in the process of the two lawyers trying to exclude people who they think are biased.
Well, it is relatively random. I understand what you're saying.
There's a whole little industry for lawyers on both sides in terms of how to select the jurors in ways that are most likely to be favorable to you. And, you know, in many cases, what it actually boils down to is you want uneducated jurors that are easy to sway.
Yeah, I hear you. I mean,
not that a choice completely at random wouldn't be full of those kinds of people anyway, but, you know.
Well, you know, but it is what it is. So you're going and you'll have fun.
Yeah,
I guess.
I'll have fun. I'll see.
Woohoo!
Yeah, it'll be exciting. Anyway, so sequester. So the main thing on the sequester is within the last week and a half or whatever, you finally started to see, like, some visible pain from the sequester. And actually, there's been pain in quite a few areas. But the difference here is it was causing pain to people that have somewhat more political power.
Let's just say, you know, what people said, which I actually am going to agree with, okay? Whole bunch of fucking rich people wind up getting delayed at the fucking airport, and now they fucking did something about
it. Yeah, so this is what happened. You know, the FAA started
furloughing
and reducing staff, and right. This caused delays at major airports all across the country, and it was obvious delays, and the airlines weren't mincing words on it. There were lots of reports of, you know, airline pilots saying, sorry, you're 2 hours late, blame the sequester, you know?
Right.
And so, you know, basically the people who are inconvenienced and bothered by this particular thing were, you can put it the way you did, it's rich people with influence. It's business travelers. It's just generally people who have enough money to be traveling on a regular basis. And, you know, they all called their Congress people and said, this is bullshit. Stop it. And so, but the interesting part of this, of course, and this actually ties in with some of the predictions I made about the sequester, if I remember correctly, which is, the idea was supposed to be, you've got this whole lump of bad things, and if you're going to fix it, you have to fix the whole thing, or you live with the pain, and that was what was supposed to make it so bad. But Congress rolled right over, including the Democrats, and said, okay, we'll fix this part.
Right.
And so,
I mean, everybody did.
They fixed it fast. We were talking like days after, like, people started bitching about
it. It's like so bizarre. I mean, these fuckers can't do anything ever.
But here's and here's the thing, though. Like, this leads back to my prediction way back was, like, you know, if you have this sequester, This is as close to a 100% Republican win as you can possibly get, because what's going to happen, and this is starting to play out now, is that the things that cause pain directly to the things that cause the most visible pain will get fixed, and everything else will be left alone. And so basically what you've enacted is a de facto cut. You cut everything, and then you put back the things that Republicans and Democrats can agree on. So the things that, yes, so all of the things where just the only the Democrats want them, like social programs and stuff, guess what? They stay cut.
Right.
And the notion was defense would probably come back too, because Republicans and Democrats would agree on putting defense back. But as it turns out, it's like the Republicans are like, eh, we're okay with those cuts. So, and the Democrats aren't in a rush to put them back either. So it looks like those cuts are staying for the moment. But you know, we bring back the air traffic controllers as the second they cause any inconvenience, which means basically the rest of the sequester stuff is going to remain permanent, minus anything else that produces an immediate sharp pain to people with political influence. You know, the examples have been put out all the time, like, you know, okay, reduction in Head Start programs for daycare and preschool for low-income people. You know, yeah, that's going to affect a lot of people too, but they're not the loud, important ones with money. So that's not going to get attention. You're reducing Meals on Wheels and feeding the elderly and all kinds of other things. Again, those aren't going to be getting the same level of attention. And also, there are all kinds of slow burn things where, you know, you're reducing staffing at various federal agencies and therefore increasing unemployment and therefore slowing down the overall economy. But those are slow and diffuse, and, you know, they're not going to get that kind of attention either. So, you know, they stay.
Well,
at least until the next round of, you know, appropriations.
So you think that nothing is going to... Okay, so your verdict is...
Yes.
All they'll do... The sequester basically stays. They're going to restore whatever the heck both sides can agree on, say, like the FAA
yep.
or anything else like that. And nothing is going to be done with the budget. Nothing's going to be done with everything else.
I think that's just about right. Hmm? I think they will the Republicans have shown they don't really want another debt ceiling battle. So those will probably quietly go away unless they decide...
No, what I was going to say is that even like President Obama went and presented a budget, which, by the way, included some entitlement cuts.
Yep, they did.
Which,
I hate.
I'm saying some.
No, I know. I was just going to say I hate how people use those words, because it all depends on the baseline again.
Right.
It's a cut relative to the baseline. What it actually is a decrease in the rate of increase.
Well, right, but those increases are already factored into the payments.
Yes,
I know. So therefore, it is a cut. I mean, because if nothing happens, okay, all right, it is going up. Okay.
Well, yes. If nothing happens, it's going up. But what?
And so this.
I actually, this is one of the things that pisses me off when people talk about baselines. The only baseline people should refer to is current value. Is it going up or down relative to today? And the answer is, like the chain CPI thing, the answer is it's still going up.
Okay, it's still going up. It's going to go up less.
It's going to go up less.
Okay, you're right. So, but bottom line is that was stuff that even like people had it as a third rail, kind of like not to touch.
And sure.
And President Obama went out on a limb and said, okay, guys, look, all right, I know we've said we would touch this, but listen, I'm going on the table and I'm proposing – let's do something.
Well, and also I should point out there are a couple things on this chain CPI thing, which is what we're talking about, which is an alternate way of calculating cost of living increases due to inflation. And from what I've read, some economists say it's actually a more accurate way of doing it, but that's very debatable. Okay. But here's the thing. First of all, this budget was not the first time that President Obama said he was willing to do chain CPI. He actually did so in the budget negotiations a year earlier. But meanwhile, in between, the Republicans had, at least some Republicans, had been saying chain CPI. If the president is serious, he has to do chain CPI. That's how we'll know he's serious. And if he does this, then we can probably get a deal. And then he says, okay, change CPI. Oh, and by the way, guys, I actually said change CPI a year ago, but you weren't listening, apparently.
Right.
But here you go, change CPI. And then the Republicans are like, oh, well, this is just, you know, this is nowhere near enough. This is just a throwaway thing. It's not real, blah, blah, blah. And so you once again sort of get the changing the goal line kind of thing.
Yeah, well, that's standard operating procedure recently.
But well, it is standard operating, but I think in fact, you know, it's probably both sides. I mean, Obama probably has no expectation that this would actually lead to a deal, and he's sort of using it as a bargain. Like, he's bluffing too. Like, if the Republicans said, "Okay, deal," I'm not sure he would have been happy with that result either.
Well, look. I'm going to say this. It even took him to get out on a limb because he got a lot of fucking heat from a lot of liberals.
Oh, he did. He sure did. He sure did.
I mean, so, you know, look, I mean, for what it's worth, I mean, I know that I don't think he expected a deal that they would just go say, okay, we'll take it. But I figured at least try to push this negotiation along some fashion, which it didn't, but, you know.
Yeah, no, I don't think anything's happening here. I think we're basically staying with the status quo. The sequester stays. Except for any cuts that become expressly politically painful to people who matter and start getting lots and lots of press, like which you know maybe some of the cuts to like poor people and stuff will get to that point, but only if it becomes a media shitstorm.
Right.
You know, like
some kid gets fucking like. I don't know, whatever, butt fucked at home because of Head Start. Who knows? Some, you know, I don't know. I mean, look, some, you know what I'm saying? A sex scandal, murder, you know, something related to one of these cuts that all of a sudden, oh my God, look, what happened? And then the fucking money will come back in.
Yeah. But only things that become a media circus will get attention. And in the meantime, like, they'll keep kicking the can down the road on, you know, when it's time for the next appropriation bill, they'll kick it down the road. When it's time for the next debt limit thing, they'll kick it down the road. And again, the exception to both of those is if the Republicans see an opportunity where they think they can get even more out of it, they might take that shot, but they were burned a couple of times recently. So they're a bit gun shy. And I think we're in kick the can down the road until the 2014 elections.
Well, all right. So it's kick down the road. All right. So that's it on the sequester. Really? I mean, that was the only thing I had to mention on that. I mean,
okay. Let's take a break and we'll see what else, if anything, we have to talk about. We'll be right back after this.
Ready for the test, Dracula?
I'm ready, Frankenstein. Then let us begin.
Creepy Classic celebrates the classic horror and science fiction films from the silent era through the 1960s, and retro TV horror from the 1950s to the 1970s. Visit creepyclassics.com for all your classic video needs. And when you buy something, tell Ron that the curmudgeons say hello.
Okay, we're back, and I guess Ryson?
Yeah, you were in Bangladesh, right, this week or something?
Oh yeah, there was the whole Bangladesh thing. And by the way, that you know, I was talking last week about the whole thing about like how much attention different tragedies get, etc. And I mentioned Texas versus Boston. I meant to and completely forgot last week to just mention Syria, because there was one actually very compelling picture that went around of a bunch of Syrians holding up a big sign saying sympathies to Boston. Now you know what it's like every day here. That. You know, because you know the
I know
it's pretty much right. I mean,
you know they're right. I know they're right. I know you're right.
And of course we have this thing in Bangladesh where I guess what the confirmed dead is like around 300 now.
Yeah, something like that.
And there's still like hundreds more missing.
377.
Yeah, that's the dead, and then there are hundreds more still missing, which at this point are presumed dead.
No, well, they keep hearing voices coming from the rubble.
I heard the last voice they heard was apparently killed during the fire that broke out there today.
I actually just looked at a headline that was on CNN like right now that said,
Hang on, still people alive.
Collapsed building owner arrested, voices still heard.
Okay.
That's the current headline right now on CNN.
Okay. Well, we'll see how many more people they pull out. I mean, they did pull out a number of people.
I know.
But hundreds dead, hundreds still missing, doesn't look good.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way. And of course, and we're talking about it, so obviously this has gotten attention in the U.S. media, but if you think 300 dead versus 3 dead in Boston, has this gotten 100 times more attention than Boston did? No.
No. You know, the thing is that, I mean, it's kind of like, I mean, this whole thing about Bangladesh and the whole buildings, I mean, it's been freaking bizarre. I mean, this is not the first building collapse.
There seems to be things like this.
Did they have no engineers in that country? I mean, seriously? I mean, what are they pulling buildings together? What, like paper mache? I mean, I'm like,
well, yeah, it's cheaper.
Well, I guess. Shit.
But, I mean, and of course, this is the local versus foreign angle, of course. Let's say you had a building collapse like this with 300 dead and hundreds more missing, and it happened in Illinois. We would be having nonstop
coverage. Oh, are you fucking kidding me? This would be like 24/7.
Yeah.
I mean, Jesus. Yeah, I mean, you know, recently we had a collapse over here for a parking garage that was under construction, mind you, okay? Yeah. But that's about the only thing. I mean, it's just my point is, I mean, these keep happening in Bangladesh for whatever reason with alarming frequency. I mean, we've heard of these number of times. I mean, it's just really,
And more generally speaking, working conditions in...
Oh, it's just horrible.
Yeah. And of course, this is where a significant portion of the... more budget textiles that you can buy in the U.S. company.
I mean, honestly, that shit just really irritates the shit out of me. I mean, honestly, I don't give a fuck about paying. I mean, I don't know about you. I'll tell you something. I don't give a fuck about paying $5 for a fucking shirt, okay, if it's going to be made by people in humane conditions, okay? I really don't.
Now, of course, you know, it's not like these are labeled. You know, this one costs...
Let's shop.
Yeah, this one cost $15, but, you know, was made by well-paid people in this place that, you know, get lunch breaks. And this one cost $5, but was made in a sweatshop where every once in a while the building collapses and kills people. You know, it's not like they're labeled that way. So it's hard to tell, you know, unless you pay a lot of attention. And I'll be honest, like, you're absolutely right. I would happily pay the $5 extra to know that my stuff was made in a safe way by people who were compensated decently, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But frankly, when I'm shopping for a shirt, I'm not looking. I'm not doing the research.
Well, I gotta
figure that out.
Look, recently, I mean, I have to, you know, I've been having to wear a lot of suits for work recently. The last few suits I bought, I specifically made US made suits.
Okay.
Okay, I bought an Italian suit and a couple of U.S. made suits. Okay, I they're made in upstate New York. They have a very good reputation, and I was like, you know, okay,
well, okay, you're doing something exceptional, and I know some people do that, but I'll be honest. When I'm looking for a shirt, first of all, I do almost all my shopping online, even for clothes.
I did that last suit online, by
okay,
the way.
But like when I do, I'm just scrolling down the things. I find the first one that looks like what I want to buy, and I hit buy. I usually am not very price sensitive because the way I figure it, like if it's a $20 shirt or a $30 shirt, who the fuck cares? As long as it's a decent shirt, you know. So I'll look at the ratings on it, and I'll look, does it look like the kind of thing I want to wear? And if so, I'll hit the button. I don't try to figure out where it's manufactured.
If you tell
blah, blah,
most
blah.
People, hey, you know what? Hey. This shirt is made in a sweatshop at $20, or you could buy this one for $25, or for $22, or for $23, or whatever the heck more pay in a place with like decent working conditions. Maybe it's not only me.
No,
do you think that most people would go and buy the one made?
I think most people who are not in a very tight financial situation would probably pay the couple extra bucks in
that
case.
70-80% of Americans at least, and the other 20 maybe just could do it and said, shit, I'm sorry, I can't afford to.
Yeah, no, but again, and I agree, I would, I think most people would, but like you have to actually pay attention, and I don't think most people pay attention. They find the shirt they like and they grab it and they buy it. And if they're paying attention to anything other than what it looks like, they're looking at the price.
I actually, you know, the thing is, the last suit I bought, I had bought this brand of a U.S. suit, okay, that was actually, it's not too expensive, okay, it's middle price, okay, for what suits go, okay, made in the U.S., high quality, and I bought one that I bought at the store, so what I did was that I went online and I actually bought another one of it, and so, but I was like, okay, oh, look, it's nice stuff, oh, and it's made in the U.S., even better, so I was like, what the hell, you know?
So now, I went and, I just went online to look at a couple shirts just because we were talking about it.
Yeah.
And just to see, like, you know, can I even tell? Okay.
Can you even tell? Yep.
So the first shirt I looked at was a polo shirt, actually. I just went searched shirts. I didn't do any sorting. I didn't do anything. The first thing that came up was a polo shirt. And I looked and I scrolled down. And in fact, it is made in Bangladesh. It doesn't tell you anything else. The next one I looked at was where the hell did it go? Dubbeljew. I don't know what the fuck that is, but maybe you do.
What?
It's Doublejew, men's casual long sleeve shirt.
It's a double Jew?
Double Jew. I don't know. Anyway, I could not find I could not find in the description anywhere information about where it was made.
Okay. Well, I never heard of the other one.
Yeah, so and you know, and then let's see. I'll try one more. And I'm skipping ones that are the same brands that I've talked about before. This next one is a Columbia Sportswear Bahama shirt.
And it's made in
doesn't appear to say. Oh wait. Company doesn't say.
Okay. Well,
so
there you
like,
have it.
Like it's not immediately obvious. Like you'd have to like, and could I figure out where this was made by like doing some more research? Maybe, but who the hell's gonna do that? You know, I'm gonna look at this shirt and say, is it a price I like, and does it look like what I want to wear? And if it is, I'm gonna buy it.
Gotcha.
Now it probably is like most tags. If you actually like are in a physical store, do say where it's made. I'll give you that. But even if you know what country it's made in, that doesn't tell you what the conditions are like at the factory making it.
Well, but let's face it. If you know it,
if it says Bangladesh,
look. Let me put it to you this way. Let me take that back because I remember, you know, 20 years ago, there was a factory up in Massachusetts. Yep. There's that had a massive fire.
Yeah.
Okay. That a lot of employees died in.
And
okay?
It was one of these where they locked the doors or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. And I actually remember that I actually knew a couple of employees that worked there, and they told me that the working conditions were horrible.
Yeah.
I mean, they actually had told me that they were. And then it happened that – and then on the press it came out that that, you know, there's a massive fire. It was all over the news, I remember. Right. And a lot of people died. And, you know, and the guy who owned it was painted as a, I don't know, that he paid everybody and something and whatever. And I remember talking to employees weeks before, and they were all telling me how the place was just a fucking, like, sweatshop. So even if it is in the U.S., it doesn't still guarantee that the place may not be, like, very unsafe and awful place to work.
And here's one. I clicked on another shirt. This is a Nautica men's solid button-down shirt made in Mauritius. What's your bet on the conditions in Mauritius?
Beats the crap out of me, to be honest with you.
See, there you go. Like, how do you judge based on that, you know?
I don't know. Shit. Anyway.
Here's one made in India. So there are a few more of these that, like, are telling me where, you know? So I guess it's potluck. Some of them. I still don't know where the double Jew is made.
The double Jew. Okay.
Okay. Yep. We were good at. We were actually our supposed topic for this segment was rice.
Well, so, I don't know. So, the racing thing turned out to be a couple of fucking people trying to...
A bunch of losers.
Yeah, basically. One guy that basically was trying to set up the other guy because you know...
they had some sort of feud going on. And right. So, he's like, what's the best thing I can do on this feud? I know. I'll send poison letters to all kinds of politicians in a way that makes it look like the other guy.
Right. Apparently, it was part of a long... ongoing.
And by the way, the other guy had a history of threatening local politicians and things like that anyway.
Yes.
So when one of the lawmakers, and I forget the one that was local to their state, I forget the guy's name. I forget. Anyway, you know, they recognized the handwriting on it wasn't the handwriting, I guess. It was the tone of the letter, the type of
Senator
phrases
Roger
he was using.
Roger Wicker.
Yeah. Yes. They saw the letter. They saw, like, the information in the letter, and they were like, oh, we know this guy.
Oh, God, that is just too fucked up.
But then the guy they arrested because they knew this guy was the wrong guy because his rival was setting him up.
Right.
You gotta be kidding me.
So the Ricin letters, I got three Ricin lace letters are mailed from with a Memphis, Tennessee postmark. Mail from several northern Mississippi counties are handled now through Memphis mail sorting centers. April 15th, investigators intercept a letter laced with ricin addressed to Republican Senator Roger Wicker of Mississippi before it reaches Capitol Hill. April 17th, two more poison-tainted letters emerge. Okay? One addressed to President Barack Obama, which is intercepted before it reaches the White House, and the other to an 80-year-old Mississippi judge, Sadie Holland. Judge Holland opens her ricin letter and is found to be fine. Authorities arrest Paul Kevin Curtis at his home in Corinth, Mississippi in the case. Mr. Curtis is an Elvis impersonator.
Yes, who of course. What else?
Say he suffers from a bipolar disorder. April 22nd, charges against Mr. Curtis are dropped and he is released from jail. Law enforcement officials say they are tracking and investigating another individual. J. Everett Dutchka for links to the crime. Lawyers for Mr. Curtis indicated towards court testimony they believe Mr. Dutchka framed their client. Federal authorities searched Mr. Dutchka's home and for a business in Tupelo in connection with the letters. Mr. Dutchka is arrested at his home, the FBI says. Basically, there's your timeline right there. And so bottom line is that, you know, these two guys apparently were going at it, and Mr. Dutchka thought that this was his way to one-up it, and I guess he's going to jail.
And there you go. And by the way, while you were talking about that, I did find, and it was right here on the page, I just was blind. The Double Jew is a Korean brand. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean it is made in Korea, but it's a Korean brand.
It's a Korean brand.
Yes.
Well, all right.
So anyway, like, next time you have a rivalry with somebody, let's just say the best way to make sure you win is not, let's repeat, not... send ricin letters pretending to be the other guy.
You know, I'm trying to think if ever in my life I have ever been angry enough with somebody or had some rival or whatever where I've actually tried to do something like...
Frame them for a crime?
Or no, not frame them for a crime, but, you know, something to undermine them, something to whatever. You know, I've never got...
Completely underhanded and...
And I got to say that the answer is no. I mean, I've never...
Congratulations, Yvonne.
Well, I think that there are a lot of people out there, and I'm not talking about, you know, you got to talk about big things or small things.
Yeah, there's a whole slippery slope here. I mean, it comes down, on the one hand, is doing completely dishonest things. On the other hand, is just, deciding whether or not to say something when you notice that they've done something that's a little bit wrong, but not quite wrong, and, you know, do you call attention to it? There are all kinds of things. There's a whole, like, slope.
Look, it's like, I mean, I don't know. I'm talking down to the petty. Like, for example, look, I had people that have, like, gone and, like, I had a guy pissed off at me. The guy went and, like, slashed one of my tires. I mean, well, people nice. Do that is my point. Okay?
You know, I'm trying to think, for example,
how many times I may have attempted that I was so pissed off at somebody that, you know, maybe I wanted to do something and I was just like, no, I'm not going to. I'm not going to resort to that.
I honestly can say that I've never I've never had something like that directed at me that I can remember.
Oh shit! Unfortunately, I had a number of things like that. I had a guy who went and by the way, the funniest thing is that the guy couldn't spell, but tried to knife my car and write the word fuck on the
Spelled fuck.
Yes, they did. Which I actually found incredibly hilarious.
P-H-U-Q?
No, F-O-C.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Well. Yeah. I was like, at first I was kind of pissed off, but then I was just like, oh God, this is so stupidly funny. And I managed to buff it out anyway, thankfully. So, you know,
but you don't yourself go around keying people's cars.
No, but there's a lot of people to do, man. I mean, there's a lot of, you know,
yeah,
a lot of hateful, spiteful people on this planet, unfortunately.
Yeah. It's like, oops, I opened my door a little hard into your car.
Look at this fucking moron and the bombing, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, shit.
I can't box anymore. I'll blow you up.
I'll blow all your fucking asses up. And I don't even know who the fuck I'm blowing. I was just doing it because I'm pissed off.
Yeah. Man. Yeah.
All right. We're done. Yeah. We're out. It's past my bedtime.
I did want to say one other thing real quick. For those of you who have not watched the video of Obama at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, it's worth looking up on YouTube and watching. It was funny. You can skip the Conan O'Brien part. It wasn't.
That's kind of terrible when the comedian is not funny, but the president is.
Yeah, the president, like, I was laughing at all his jokes. And the little, I don't know, have you watched House of Cards?
No.
Okay, so I've watched the British House of Cards that was from the 90s, and I've just started the American House of Cards that Netflix put out. It's okay in the first episode. We'll see how it goes. That's as far as I've gotten so far. There's 12 episodes that are out so far, because they put a season out at the time. But anyway, they had a little clip at the beginning that was based on House of Cards, and it was kind of funny too. But watch the Obama part. It was pretty cool. It was funny. It was worth watching. Like I said, skip Conan O'Brien. Whatever. He was not funny. He yelled a lot. I don't know why he was yelling. And the only other thought I had on the White House Correspondents' Dinner is that I think from this point forward, the thing on White House Correspondents' Dinner will always be noted is that a couple years ago or whenever it was, at this point I even forget, like the White House Correspondents' the timeline was Obama ordered the hit on Osama bin Laden and then went to the White House Correspondents' Dinner, did a bunch of jokes about all kinds of stuff, made fun of Donald Trump, and then he went back to the White House Situation Room to watch them kill Osama bin Laden. And it's like, wow.
Well.
Yeah, and of course, you watched him at the dinner and giving the jokes and what, not the slightest clue that there was anything significant going on. He was just having fun.
I know.
And it's like, you know, there's the life of a president for you.
Yeah, there's the life of a president for you.
But anyway, watch the funny stuff. Also, the Bush Library opened. And so we got to see all five living presidents together, probably for the last time. We'll see. Maybe not. But it doesn't happen very often that you get all the living presidents together.
I need to throw this joke out, but, you know, isn't the fucking Bush Library a fucking oxymoron? I mean, really?
Well, the joke always was that, like, did you hear the opening of the Bush Library got delayed? No. Why? Well, there was a leak and the book got wet.
There you go. Exactly.
Anyway, that was one of many jokes made about the Bush Library. I don't know who I'm stealing it from.
But yeah, you know, you can make all the jokes you want.
But anyway, the whole thing was that all week there was all this kind of stuff about people talking about all the good things about the Bush legacy and a lot of people complaining that says, why are you talking about the good things? Don't you remember all the bad things?
All the stuff that sucked ass!
You know, and you know, all presidents,
for now.
All presidents try to rehabilitate their image over time, but I think it's, you know, we're not there yet with W.
I, you know what? Let me tell you something. I'm thinking about Reagan, Bush Sr., all of these, right? We're talking about 6 years afterwards, okay?
Yep.
I mean, I'm sorry. The rehabilitation of GW – I mean, I'm sorry. I think he's going down almost as bad as – you think about who was a Depression president?
Hoover? Harding?
He's going to have as much trouble as they did. I mean, he really – I mean, I'm thinking about all the presidents that I've been alive that we've seen, like,
because you were alive during the Depression.
But no, I mean that I'm thinking about I've been alive.
Yeah,
what I'm saying is that I mean, all of those got significantly better reputation 6 years after, you know.
It took longer than, like, both LBJ and Nixon, for instance.
Okay. All right. Well, I wasn't. I wasn't.
They were still alive while you were alive. You were probably born during the Nixon administration.
Not LBJ.
Like I was.
Not LBJ. Okay, but
yeah.
But the only guy was Nixon. But let's face it, Nixon almost got impeached.
Well, and I saw there was a Paul Krugman editorial talking about how.
I mean, he's the only president that ever resigned.
Yes, but there was a Paul Krugman editorial that was like, you know, what was the exact words? Stupid thing. Anyway, basically, Krugman was saying Bush was the first president of our lifetimes to bring dishonesty to the presidency or whatever. And I'm like, Nixon?
Paul Krugman's a fucking
Nixon, Johnson. Yeah, they're all they're all kinds of folks. But anyway, but. Yeah, so I think it's a little early, but meanwhile, George H.W. Bush was up there, you know, he was in a wheelchair, wheelchair, bright pink socks.
Yeah,
like,
there you go.
And Carter, by the way, has lived the longest after being president of any president so far. He passed the previous record a year ago or something like that, so.
Well, okay, so, all right, we'll see, but I don't see... I still see him that if I count outside of Nixon, the only president ever resigned. But if I'm thinking Carter, Reagan, Bush Sr., Clinton, you know, those, I mean, he really is behind those in terms of.
Look, he had a pretty disastrous time as president by a lot of metrics. I mean, there's some folks obviously that liked what he did, but by a lot of metrics in terms of what happened with the economy, the wars he got us into, the fact that, like, it's almost universally recognized right now that the Iraq war
was a mistake.
Well, you know, at the very least, all the reasons we got into it turned out to be false.
True. Right.
And there's a quite strong argument to be said that, you know, they knew it was false.
Right.
Of course, there's also an argument to be made, and they certainly say they didn't know it was false. They thought it was true. They went on the best information they have. But if you look at the facts, maybe they did go on the best information they have, but they were clearly looking the other way of any contraindications. You know, like, whenever anybody tried to tell them they were full of shit, they told them to shut up and go away.
There was no fucking good reason to go into fucking Iraq other than these fucking guys, whatever fucking bullshit story. All right. Okay.
Anyway, that's it. We'll let you go. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. We're out of here. As usual, email me at abelsmay@abelsmay.com with any questions, comments, thoughts. Tell all your friends to listen to us. Share us on all your social media. And we'll talk to you next week. Goodbye.
Good night.
Night. Later. Morning. Whenever
you hear us.
Yeah.
Right.
Goodbye.